Hi, I'm Alyssa Milano, and this is Sorry Not Sorry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our first Sorry Not Sorry happy hour. I don't know. We all know that there's a lot of news. We all absorb a lot of news, and most of it is bad and depressing. And I know for me, it can be really overwhelming, and it can make it really hard to stay engaged and stay involved. And obviously, we're in a time where we all really need to be engaged and involved. So today we thought we'd try something that might be the first in a series, and it's just good vibes and good news only.
So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking my drink. You know my drink.
I know your drink, your little fake Paloma, which is one of my favorites. I have fake moonshine, but the rest of the night I'm going with a little bit of gin and tonic. So I just want to say to everybody, welcome. May the best of the past be the worst of the future. Cheers. And so I want to say to everyone listening, later in the show, we're going to read some of your own personal good news here on the show. So if you want us to do that, go ahead and pop it in the Q&A, and we will read it there a little bit later. But we're so glad that you're here.
And if you want to take a moment to just say hi to each other in the chat, as well as where you're from and some good news that you have, we will read some of that good news out.
Yeah. And you should listen to the podcast. If you don't subscribe to the podcast, you can subscribe for free anywhere you listen to podcasts. And in about 10 days, not this coming Monday, but the next Monday, this episode will be up live. So you might get to hear yourself called out on the air.
Again, thank you so much for being here. And why don't you start us off with some good news?
Yeah. So we are recording this right before Earth Day. And I know that most people hear the environment and they think, oh no, end of the world, climate catastrophe. And I get it. But there is, in fact, a bunch of good news with the environment lately and with climate change and some good things that are happening around that. And so I wanted to start out first by talking about something that the Biden administration has just done, which I think is a really big deal. They've announced drinking water standards around forever chemicals, these things called PFAs, which you may have heard of. They're these chemicals that exist in our water supply and they never break down. They stay in there. We're finding them in our bodies.
It's a class of thousands of chemicals widely used in manufacturing and consumer products. And they're called forever chemicals because of their strong carbon fluoride bonds that don't break down at all in nature.
Guess what? We're all drinking them. Almost 200 million people in the United States have PFAs in their drinking water. And I know this is a good news podcast, so we're about to get to that. President Biden has issued these drinking water standards, which is going to help us clean that out of our water. But it's not just initiating the standards, right? He's also allocated over $1 billion in funding to help states and towns adapt to this, which is going to mean that many of us are going to start having much cleaner water than we have. And I think about Michigan, I think about Flint, where they already have so many problems with their water. And we think about the contamination that's come out of the Great Lakes. And the changes in lives that this is going to make for people is a really big deal, right?
Yeah. And the fact that this really advances Biden's cancer moonshot, which is working to cut cancer deaths in half by the 2040s. So this is, it's a big deal. And it's an example of Biden keeping a campaign promise. And also, it's a great example of the power of sustained activism.
Like, this would not have happened without, and this is not a knock on the Biden administration, it's just how government functions, right? This would not have happened without the pressure from people who have been doing this. I think about like Mark Ruffalo, who is just fierce in constant calling and who have been doing this. And the people that this is going to help are people who really need help. I mean, it's going to help all of us, but I think about the people who are most affected by this. And what's going to happen when these filters are put into their water systems? And we're going to save thousands and thousands of lives of people who their government has largely not paid a lot of attention to. And I think this is just really fantastic news. This is stuff that's actually going to change lives, to extend lives, to fix quality of lives. It's great.
I have to be a better ally than that because we mentioned Mark Ruffalo, but of course, they're the celebrities, but there are people in environmental groups working nonstop to make this happen. And those are the people we should be holding up and lifting. And let's just keep going. This is something really to build on because it is heartbreaking. The effects, we're seeing it everywhere.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that too, because I have a good friend who understandably has been feeling really frustrated about what's happening in this country around women's rights and their bodily autonomy. And I saw a post that she made on social media just asking, is there any national organization that is working around this, that's trying to organize on the top level? And I said, of course there are. Here are some organizations. But what really is working and is working on that front are the small grassroots organizations that are 100% changing the world, right? If you look at what's happening in courts and in elections, every time Roe has been on the ballot, Roe has won. Every single time abortion has been on the ballot since Roe fell, it has won. And that is the work not only of these big national organizations, but of local voter turnout organizations and local activist organizations who are changing the ballot, who are changing what's happening at the local and state election level. And I think that's going to completely redefine this election. I don't think it's really possible to be a social media activist anymore, but I think it's really possible to be a on-the-ground, turnout in the streets, in the nitty-gritty of it, activist that can make a really big difference right now. And we're seeing that happening. We're seeing that happen on this particular issue with water. We're seeing it with abortion rights. I think that we will see it with trans rights. I think we're going to see a great rejection of Moms of Liberty and that kind of stuff because of the power of these activist groups. And so keep it up. That's a big deal.
And as always, you could follow both of us on social media, where we always try to uplift the organizations that are doing the hard work on the ground, passing over our mics to give them the applause that these are the heroes of the world. They dedicate their entire lives to a cause and work tirelessly every single day to make that happen. It's amazing.
And if you're looking for people to follow, I will say that's usually who we have on the podcast. We very rarely have the big celebrity, right? We have activists, authors, experts who are coming in and talking about this. So if you're looking for people to follow or trying to get some sort of expertise on particular issues, just go back and look at the almost 300 episodes we have of the podcast at this point with those experts who have a lot to say and who have a real expertise in their issues that you can follow and get involved with.
Now, Europe also did something very important. The European Court of Human Rights ruled that governments who refuse to act on climate change violate fundamental human rights.
What that's saying is that governments have a responsibility to their people, which feels kind of shocking, right? That they actually have to do it. And what's a big deal about this is that it says that the particular court decision, and I'm no lawyer, I'm reading from another news article here, but it said that Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights encompasses a right to effective protection by the state from the serious adverse effects of climate change on lives, health, well-being, and quality of life. Now, Europe is a big place, right? It's a big place with giant economies.
You know, they're already doing so. We've seen Germany cutting fossil fuel power plants, for example.
For sure. And we're also seeing another thing that I just read in there, actually, is that Europe is making a focus on bike lanes in all of their cities. And they're actually becoming very bicycle friendly. And I understand that there are issues of ableism that come around with that. But for people who are able to bike, this makes a huge difference in both access to cities and in the environmental state of particular countries, right? I love it.
It's amazing. The next thing on our list to talk about is a new-ish use for coffee grounds. You're going to have to explain this to me.
Yeah, so this came up out of a study out of Brazil. I drink a lot of coffee. I think we all drink a lot of coffee. In fact, we drink so much coffee that there are 6 million tons of coffee grounds created annually. And most of these go into landfills. They go in your trash and they go into landfills. Now, at home, these grounds make great compost, right? And you can put them, if you have a home compost, can put them in there. But for those of us who live, say, in apartments or don't have home compost, or for an industrial scale, these grounds end up going into landfills. And that's tons and tons of stuff that goes in there. So that's problem A. Problem B is that we have all of these farms across the world that use herbicides. These big industrial farms that use herbicides to protect their crops from weeds. And while I get the evil of that, it's also really important right now as far as food production goes, right? These herbicides allow us to produce enough food so that most people can eat. And well, they're still chemicals, right? Like pesticides, they're chemicals. They're designed to kill living things. I don't know specifically if they are as dangerous as pesticides. I guess we'd have to bring on an agriculturist about that to answer that specifically, but they are dangerous for sure. And they are even more important in our water. They leach into our groundwater from farm runoff. And that hurts us. That hurts us all, right? But guess what? We put coffee in the soil and we activate it, and it becomes a great filter for these herbicides. And all of a sudden, we see a protection of groundwater and a reduction of 6 million tons of coffee grounds from landfill, potentially, that could solve both of these problems at the same time, which is one of the things that I love about good science, is that it oftentimes will solve a second problem when it's trying to solve a first problem.
So if we keep our coffee grounds in the house and put it, like, we have a creek in the back of our house.
In fact, you have a garden. You have a garden. You grow food in your house. It makes great compost. You could just compost it. And you could put that as fertilizer into your garden. Anyone who has a home garden, even one of those countertop compost bins, right? Or something you put out on your porch. If you have potted plants, you can use your coffee grounds as compost. And they don't go into the landfill in a plastic garbage bag. And in fact, I will say, I've seen some of my local coffee shops in their drive-thru have used coffee grounds right at the drive-thru that people could just pick up for their garden. And I think that's a really cool thing, but you can do that at home too. The other thing I will tell you is that you hear about, if you're using one of the single-use coffee makers that has its own sort of thing in a plastic cup or whatever, the best thing is to not do that. The best thing is, if you can avoid that, to not use that and to use at least one of the inserts that you can put in with the mesh inserts and use that instead. But if you can't do that, you can in fact still cut out the grounds, dump them into compost, and recycle the plastic part of it. And so that's another thing that you're able to do.
Like, how lazy we've gotten that a good old-fashioned coffee machine is just not expedient enough for us, that we need to put plastic little pods in a thing and press a button. By the way, the coffee doesn't even compare to, like, a good stove percolator. It says so much about us that those little pods have become the norm for making at-home coffee. And who knows what kind of plastic particles we're getting. I'm going to switch gears because I think this is really important and totally got overshadowed by a lot of other less exciting or less happy news. President Biden announced a huge change about gun violence. And I don't know why everyone is not talking about this. This is huge.
And we've been talking about this. I'm almost 50 years old, and we've been talking about this my entire adult life. This was a thing I started hearing about around the time of Columbine, when I was in my early 20s in the late 90s, because the two Columbine shooters exploited a particular problem in the gun show loophole, which has since been closed, but that particular problem, in order to get the guns that they used in that shooting. But before this thing was closed, almost anybody could go into a gun show and buy a gun from somebody who is not a licensed federal firearms dealer and walk out with that gun and never have a background check done on them. And we've seen people who were selling hundreds of thousands of dollars of guns a year. The intent was to be like, if you wanted to leave one of your guns to your grandchildren or something like that, which I personally believe they should still get background checks. I see some pretty dumb grandchildren out there, right? But the intent was that particular gun could transfer. And what's happened instead is that anybody can go on the internet and buy a gun without a background check. Anyone can go into a gun show. I live in the South, and I will tell you, about half of the billboards I see are gun show. It's in a hotel parking lot and some tents, and you walk in and you can come out with almost anything you want. And that's being shut down by this new rule that the administration has proposed. And that's on top of the Safer Communities Act that was passed back in 2021 that started this particular work. And I will tell you, the Biden administration has been the first administration in my adult lifetime that has done anything about guns. It goes all the way back to the Clinton administration.
But also, Ben, activism works. We work every single day tirelessly to make sure that our country has stricter gun regulations so that our children are safer.
And this shouldn't be a controversial thing, right? I think that if we really just sat down and honestly looked at this, and we have done this through polling, almost everybody in the country wanted this done. Almost everybody in the country wanted this done. The people who didn't were fewer than 200 people in Congress.
When have we ever agreed this strongly about anything as a nation?
It's this and the Equal Rights Amendment, right? That everyone agrees on. But hey, look, we got this one done, right? So that's next. That's coming. And so if we can do that, we can do this.
We know that gun violence is a public health emergency. So any effort to reduce it will improve public health. But there's also some other good health news too.
Yeah. And we are rightly, I think, focused in this country primarily on women's health because women's bodies are up for debate and under attack somehow when men's bodies are not.
I grew 2 children in my body without anyone telling me how to do it.
And I got pretty good at video games. So we see how that shakes out, right? But there are important like men's health issues that come into play here, right? And some things that we should be paying attention to that I think help all of us. And this is one of those things because it's an access to care issue about prostate cancer screening. And huge percentages of men will get prostate cancer in their lifetime. Something like 300,000 new cases in the United States are discovered every year. It's a lot of people. And something like 35,000 men every year die from prostate cancer. It's a lot of people. It's a really significant number. And it goes hidden. It's under the radar. Men have a lot of taboo talking about this. We've had a podcast on this, and I'm going to have to go back and look that up, about a man, a Boston Globe reporter who was going through prostate cancer. But one of the problems with this, with all of the stigma that goes through it, the homophobia that comes into the reluctance to test, all of this other stuff that happens, testing for prostate cancer has been a problem. And one of the primary diagnostic tests is a 3-phase MRI that requires like contrast and that kind of stuff. Well, this new study has come out that shows eliminating one of the phases of that MRI does not make any difference in the particular diagnosis or efficacy of the diagnosis, which means it's going to be faster, less invasive, and cheaper for people to access care. And I think that's been a big deal. I don't know if you've ever had an MRI recently, but I did. And it cost me several $1,000s to have an MRI. And so if we eliminate that access to care, we're going to have more men perhaps who go and get tested and who go and get diagnosed and perhaps get treated before prostate cancer, which thankfully in most cases is a slow growing cancer before it becomes a problem that cannot be treated.
You know where my mind is going, right?
I do. Let's go there.
Nobody needed to speak up about their own prostate cancer and fight for this. Celebrities speaking out every single day about being shocked to find out that they are in later stages of breast cancer. Where's our breakthrough?
Yeah. And that should be a real thing. It should be a real thing. Although I will say, and this is not to take away from that, there is almost a cynical awareness campaign around breast cancer. We think of like the pinking of things, and we put a pink ribbon on things, and we think that we're supporting breast cancer when in fact you're just supporting pink mac and cheese or whatever, right? But there's nothing like that on an awareness level for this particular cancer, this particular prostate cancer. And so I think removing this barrier is a net positive, even though you're absolutely right. It reveals some of the other social issues that are inherent in our healthcare system for sure. I'll still take the win, I guess, on that while we can and still move through.
And did I read somewhere that there's like a vaccine breakthrough?
This is brand new and this is like huge. How many like flu COVID boosters have you had in the last couple of years?
Once I turned 50, it seemed like I was getting a vaccine every other week for something and then a booster like 6 months later for that same thing.
All the time. We go and get flu shots every year. It looks like we're going to be going and get COVID shots every year. This study, this came out of just this week, out of University of California at Riverside, right near neck of the woods, which they should hire me as an English professor, by the way, and we can hang out in person more often. But this study that came out of there shows a new type of virus that the scientists who are developing it call it potentially a universal vaccine, a new type of vaccine, rather. This new kind of vaccine, we think that there is a particular type of code that exists in a number of the genetic code of viruses. And this vaccine attacks that part of the virus that is shared between them, does not adapt year to year, doesn't change, so that you maintain your immunity to all of these separate viruses. And we could be talking COVID, we could be talking pneumonia, we could be talking flu, we could be talking influenza A and B, we might be talking other types of respiratory viruses like SARS viruses that all share the same genetic code in this particular piece. And that is what this vaccine goes for. So it might be one of those things that you get one shot and you're done.
Is that shot going to wreak havoc on our immune system?
Not according to what these scientists are saying. They're saying like it's safe for babies. They're saying this particular chain does not exist in human DNA at all.
I mean, my nephews, my brother, I'm sure parents of young kids, like with multiple children, can relate to this. But my brother and his wife and their two kids, because their kids were in quarantine for such a long time, their immune systems are not like what my kids' immune systems are. And they literally not only get everything, it's as if they're not healthy more than they're healthy. And the pediatricians, like, this is, I'm seeing this a lot. And it's the kids that should have been in preschool and being exposed to all of the germs and the viruses, but instead were in quarantine and didn't get exposed. And they're getting sicker more often now.
The other thing I want to say really quickly about this vaccine is that we have this myth that's come out since COVID. And we see people like RFK and Aaron Rodgers and those people spreading this myth that vaccines are a profit center for big pharma. That the reason we have these boosters is that big pharma wants to make money. And I will tell you, big pharma wants to make money, but it's not on vaccines. That's not where their profit centers are. Their profit centers are on like Viagra. And until recently, until the Biden administration was able to get this fixed, on insulin. Their profit centers, they're not around vaccines. And this particular vaccine, if it comes through, this particular vaccine will fundamentally change who has access to these particular things and completely undercut that argument, that sort of lie that people are sharing about vaccines as just a profit vessel for these big companies, which is just not true.
Okay. Now, I'm very excited about this next one. A new study shows that receiving touch by both humans, but also by weighted blankets in case your husband happens to be away a lot. Not that I'm speaking about me. I haven't invested in multiple weighted blankets throughout my house.
There was one time I was in your house and the dogs came running up. And for those of you who don't know, Alyssa has 312 dogs and they run around her house all day. And I love them. They are fantastic dogs.
For this reason, I'm convinced this receiving touch.
That makes sense because they are very affectionate dogs. They're great dogs. But they had knocked this blanket off the couch. And I thought, all right, I'm going to pick this blanket off the couch. And I just about gave myself a hernia because I didn't know it was one of those 712-pound weighted blankets. They are everywhere in your house.
This is incredible. We had the Surgeon General on the show. We talked about was this loneliness epidemic. You know, and I think it's part of the reason why we're so attached to our cell phones. Lots of people are alone and touch-starved.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, like, not too long ago, you know this, I moved away from my family and my daughter to take a job 1,000 miles away from there. Most of the people I see are my students. I am certainly not touching them, and they are not touching me. I actually have physical contact with humans maybe once every 2 months, and it is weird. It is a weird thing. You actually miss that. I never even thought about it. I guess I do. Well, now that I know this, that's a thing. I just have to figure out how to get over the claustrophobia.
This research, listen to this, shows that even simulated human touch, weighted blankets, they even mentioned robots, which I don't know, that just sounds creepy.
Yeah, I agree too. But what if, let's just say, what if you are, I think about this a lot. There are people that you and I both know, and probably people most of us know who are agoraphobic, who just can't.
Yes, my grandmother, who is still alive, God bless her, she's agoraphobic. She has not been outside for 35 years.
And they have some of these people, hopefully not your grandmother, but some of these people have no contact with other humans, right? They'll have a delivery driver leave something outside the door. And I see now the company that released the Roomba has their like giant dancing robot that's about to be available. Something like that might just simulate some sort of physical contact in the way that some people are using ChatGPT.
I don't know. It's great, but let's try to be together in a room and hold hands, brush hair away from people's faces and do all of the beautiful things that sparks that dopamine rush that we need to feel connected. All of this is great for those who are, I don't know, not well enough to be in a room with someone else. But I don't want to come up with solutions for problems that like we already know the solution. First of all, we also have to fund mental health. I feel since the pandemic, like we have not even, and I'm not even taking account the long COVID aspect, which I've been suffering from for feels like my entire life. But I do think that we have not given enough attention to the fact that, you guys, we all lived through a fucking pandemic. I never thought, even as pessimistic as I can be and as cynical as I could be, I never thought, wow, we're going to get hit with something that is going to be so catastrophic and we're going to have to stay in our house and I'm not going to get to see my mom for 3 months. Like, what? And I don't think we've even touched on the mental health aspect of what that did to humanity. So that happens, right?
And that's going to be a decades long thing for us to fix. That's going to be a lifetime of us arranging from that. And I think it's going to fundamentally change how we interact with people forever, right? I don't think it's going to be the same. I mean, look at what we're doing right now.
Like my daughter subconsciously has a food contamination issue because mm-hmm. she watched me at very important times in her life wash down groceries. And she'll say, is this expired, Mom? That's not why I wash down groceries. So I don't even think we've touched on what that's going to do. And we need to do that before creating robots that can caress us and hold us and dance with us. Let's talk about the good news in the economy quickly.
Okay, so here's the big thing. For the first time since the 1960s, in either of our lifetimes, you put us together, we have lived 100 years. For the first time in either of our lifetimes, the unemployment rate has been below 4% for more than 2 years, for 26 straight months. Joe Biden is the jobs president. I'm telling you, this is who he is. He is the jobs president in a way that we have never seen before, and that we certainly won't see if he's not in office come January.
I'm still mad at him, though.
Yeah, we can be mad at him. We can be mad at him for a lot of things, but we also have to give him credit for the things that he's doing right. And nobody in the whole world said we were going to be able to get the economic crisis of inflation and unemployment together under control without a recession. This was the complete, everybody was saying that.
If he can get that done, imagine mm-hmm. what else he should be getting done.
He should be. And we're going to keep pushing him. We have that activism, right? But he did get this done. And nobody would say that. And I will take that good news for today. None of, by the way, what we're saying here, we're talking about a lot of good news. None of this is putting our head in the sand about the bad news. None of this is minimizing that bad news. But we can still acknowledge the good stuff, right?
I mean, good news can be just funny and entertaining. Do you remember that great feel-good story? Years ago, a PE coach, I think he was on the track team, like cross country, whatever that, I don't know. I've never run more than a mile in my life, but he wanted to keep his team like motivated during summer break. And this is so brilliant. He paired his team up with shelter dogs because shelter dogs need exercise. And now these programs are in place all over. Of course, they make videos of these pairings and the videos go viral. And it has led to so many adoptions of these dogs. And it was one person, right? Like one PE coach. It was somewhere in California, I think. And he was like, you know what? How do I keep my cross country team motivated during the summer? I know. I'm going to pair them up with shelter dogs. If one man can do that, imagine what we can do. And then he just started getting phone calls from PE coaches across the country, like, how did you put that in place? And they're all over now. And these programs have led to so many adoptions. And I just think that's so lovely.
That is the next Free Willy, if that ever gets to be a movie. I would watch that every day. That would be like, when I'm sick, that's the movie I would put on. So my story that I want to share that's funny, it's not feel good in the same way. And I will say, I have said over and over again, and I'm going to violate my own principle here, we shouldn't be talking so much about Trump, right? We shouldn't be making fun of him. We shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. It's not about him. It's that we can't persuade people that way. There's no way to convince people by talking bad about Trump. The people who are Trump voters, they know all this stuff. We're not going to surprise anybody, and we're not going to influence anybody by being nasty about him.
It validates that he is a viable option.
And I say all of that, and I'm just going to break with that now, because so I teach rhetoric.
What does that mean, by the way?
So rhetoric is, in like the short version of this, is rhetoric is speech that is designed to influence a change in thought or action. That's it. So if you want to sell a car, you make a car commercial, that's rhetoric. If you want to get people to vote for the ERA and you write a Creatives for the ERA letter and get people to sign on to it. That's rhetoric, but it's just speech that's designed to influence change in thought or action. And so I teach this to first-year college students. And I think in the United States, Abraham Lincoln is one of the greatest rhetoricians of all time. His writing is brilliant. And some of his writing is about the Gettysburg Address, right? And he has this brilliant address. It's only a little over 200 words. School kids across the country memorize this. It's burned into memories for entire lives because of how simple and powerful it is. And so Trump recently went to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And if you haven't seen this, I'm just going to share a little bit of what he had to say, because this is part of the story, but it's not the entire story.
Where our Union was saved by the immortal heroes at Gettysburg. Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was, the Battle of Gettysburg. What an unbelievable, I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg, wow. I go to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania to look and to watch. And the statement of Robert E. Lee, who's no longer in favor. Did you ever notice that? No longer in favor. Never fight uphill, me boys. Never fight uphill. They were fighting uphill. He said, wow, that was a big mistake. He lost his great general. And they were fighting. Never fight uphill, me boys. But it was too late.
So, was he a pirate?
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, I will say there is absolutely no evidence that Robert E. Lee said never fight up hills with or without the me boys, right? That's just made up. I don't know where he got that, but he didn't say that. He wasn't like with his pirate hook, like, arr, that didn't happen. So here's the thing. That's not the funny part of the story. That is funny, but it's not the funny part of the story. The funny part of the story is there was somebody on Twitter who took that, typed it out like it was a graded essay. And as somebody who has to grade a lot of essays over the next few little bit here, it was pretty funny. He crossed out stuff in red ink. He put it out, posted a picture of it, said, what am I going to do with this student? Okay, so that's funny enough on its own. And you can find that on Twitter if you want to go look for it. The account was Elijah's Final Semester, who's the account that did that. But here's the funny part. The Charlotte, North Carolina GOP Twitter account saw that, retweeted it and said, without noticing that it was Trump's, said, this is a product of the Democrat school system and what happens here in Charlotte. And it was Trump's speech. And I love it so much. I love it. I'm going to use it in class to show why you have to check your sources. But it's such a perfect thing. And it just made me laugh a lot this week when we all need some laughs.
How about personal good news? Do you have any personal good news, Ben?
Yeah, I do. My daughter, Emma, who you've heard me talk about on the podcast, she is about to graduate from college. 1 month from today, she gets her college degree. And when we met, which has now been like 8 years, she was dying, we thought, right? We met because she was in the hospital at that time for 100 days. And we didn't know if she was going to survive those years. We didn't know if she would ever graduate from high school. She took most of high school from her hospital bed. And now she's about to graduate from college in Massachusetts with a degree in criminology. And I have never been more proud of anything in my whole life. So that's my good news. What about you?
It's similar because I think as parents, it's hard. And I think any parent will tell you that, you know, those moments of bliss, you know, because so many people talk about, I think it's part of the media wants us to really feel this way. But when they say, when people say, oh, it's the most rewarding thing in my life that I've ever done. And it's hard. It's hard. But I understand there are these fleeting moments that happen. And I understand why people say that parenting is the most rewarding thing that they've ever done. But those moments are so fleeting, right? So it's hard to grasp on that that's the moment. And I had two moments in the last week, which again, I think any parent of multiple children will tell you that rarely are both of your kids okay at the same time. Like they know that if one is struggling, the other has to be okay. And then when the other is struggling, the other child is okay. And I had one of those weeks where both of my kids were okay. And yeah, and there were two moments that were just special parenting moments where you get it. And one was with Milo, and it was watching him play his first baseball game with his new middle school team, and they won 16-1, and it was just super exciting.
And for those of you who don't know, Alyssa's son Milo is basically a Major League Baseball player already. At my best, on my very best day, I would never get called up to play catch with Milo.
He's pretty special, and he really does exemplify that idea that talent is great, but it's really hard work that separates, especially at this age, because if you're still playing baseball at 12, everyone's good. So the thing that I think makes my son special is that it's never enough for him. Baseball, he could do it. I wish I loved doing anything as much as that kid loves playing baseball. That's really rewarding in itself. And in that same vein, my Bella, this is just a total full circle moment. Bella started in the musical Annie last weekend, and she played Tessie. And I cried literally the entire time.
Oh, she's so great. And how did you get your start in acting? Let's remind everybody.
I did Annie when I was just her age. I played Kate in July, understudied for Molly. So to watch her do it, my heart was just bursting. It's just wild. And people used to say to me before I had kids, would you let your kid be an actor? And I was like, no, there's no way. They need to be a normal kid with a normal childhood and go to school and all the things. And then I had kids and I realized like they come out who they are. And it's our job to just nurture that and give them the opportunity to see if it's right for them.
And I want to say, if you are listening and you want to get a sense of how great and cool and funny Bella is, you should go and look at Alyssa's TikTok, because there is a video that she had been sneaking into your drafts of her rating your outfits over the years. And she is so funny.
She's been stealing my phone and making secret TikToks, but she's so smart because I keep talking about how bad social media is. So she makes them, but then she just saves them into the drafts folder. I'll go on to TikTok and I'll be like, why do I have 32 drafts? And I'll find these amazing TikToks that she makes that she just saves. And it's just, oh my God, it is the best thing ever. It's great. Anyway, so Milo's on Instagram. If you want to follow him, it's Milo Bugliari. And Bella's all over my TikTok account if you want to follow what she's sneaking into my drafts. But I do want to say this, because I think this is important. And then I want to hear all about everyone else's good news. I spoke to my therapist this week because I still do therapy once a week. People think that's shocking, but I feel like mental health is a process and you're never done. And when I spoke to him, I was telling him the good news of my week. And he said to me, I want you to look around the room right now and just really take this in. I want you to relax your shoulders and take a deep breath. And just try to feel this pride, what you're feeling as you're conveying this to me right now. I want you to feel this really deeply. And I did it. I like looked around the room. And by the way, everyone watching at home, maybe you guys can do this too. And I shook everything out. I looked around and I took a deep breath and I thought about it later. And I think what his point was is that we are so quick to move on from the easy moments of our lives. And we tend to dwell on like the complicated moments or the tough moments to try to find solutions or sometimes maybe just like wallow in the hurt or the heartache. But maybe if we try to practice, right? Because all this life is a practice. If we try to practice dwelling on the happy moments, and maybe we could just all start to do that more. Find the happy, find the good news, and allow, instead of the bad news motivating us, maybe allow the good news to motivate us and to build on the good news rather than to fight against the bad news. And I'm going to really try to do that in my life, and especially leading up to the election, is try to build on the good news, not only personally, but the good news that is happening, because I really think we could get so bogged down in our own sorrow, but also our sorrow as a nation, which, by the way, not to discredit any of that, it's all valid. But how do we practice feeling grateful for being alive, living through a pandemic, having the courage and grace to wake up every morning and do the little things like get out of bed. And that's what I'm going to try to do. And I think that was our motivation in doing this tonight. Allow yourself to feel the happy and to build on that to make a difference and share that, because life is going to get really hard. Multiple wars being fought. We need to model goodness for our children, for future generations. And we need to model how to take care of ourselves and our hearts. And I think the best way to do that, and people talk about gratitude all the time, but maybe we could all just commit to using that as a practice and working towards light instead of working against the dark.
A lot of our listeners have had some good things to say.
I want to hear all of it.
Let's start with Christina. Christina Cook from Kansas talks about some action that the Kansas governor took there. And I will tell you, I know that Kansas has a Democratic governor, but in my head, Kansas is a pretty red state. And so I don't really think about this. But Governor Laura Kelly there vetoed bills that the Republican legislature put through that tried to prohibit gender identity health for transgender youth. And they had even tried to create a crime of coercing somebody to have an abortion. And the governor vetoed all of this stuff. And that's great. I love to see that, because good luck overturning that. Like, we see people elected to office and doing the things to represent the people, not the extremists. And so that's pretty great news. Here's another really big one, because this is for somebody that you and I both love a lot. Stephen Martin is here. And Stephen is celebrating 8 years of kicking chronic myeloid leukemia's ass. The diagnosis was his on-ramp to activism to save the American Care Act. And recently, President Obama shared his story on the anniversary of the ACA signing, which is fantastic. So we've got Stephen's news. And we're proud of you, Stephen. And then Charlotte Burrows from the UK. So after being diagnosed last year with severe generalized anxiety disorder, which we feel that pain, and allowing it to rule my life, resulting in me not being able to work for almost a year, I have just secured a promotion. So great job. That is amazing.
Good for you.
And Connor was here because he met you on the, or he first encountered you on the cover of Zoom Autism magazine. And it's April is Autism Awareness Month. And so he's really proud to being able to work together to help raise awareness and help people with autism. Dominique Beltran is happy about sustaining activism and cheering us on around Earth Day and is proud to be making a difference on water. Let's see, who else do we have good news?
In the chat, someone LQ said to everyone, I wrote to Amnesty International, and then they created a petition.
Oh, that's awesome. Good job, LQ. That's great.
And the fact that you took initiative and you made something happen, that's how one person can make a difference. It's incredible.
That's fantastic. Vanessa Hope is here, whose husband Ted Hope works all day in and out on improving the independent film ecosystem for all, is going to be awarded a Hero of Film Award at the Dock Edge Film Festival in New Zealand this June.
Amazing.
Patrick Franks is a member of an economic group that is helping the residents of his rural community find better job opportunities. Marsha shares some positive news about a young mother named Pam who has two kids who had been diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer and got really positive news on some scans, which is fantastic.
Amazing.
And Sunshine B14 says, Del Sol and I support an actor with disabilities who happens to admire you a lot in your acting and activism. And he's been doing stage productions, and his dream is to work on an Alyssa Milano production someday to represent real actors with disabilities.
I love that.
Glad to have you here, Dominique. That's fantastic. And so that's a lot of really good news that we've had just in this couple of minutes here. And that's a lot for us to take with us into the hellscape that's out there.
What is like a good exercise for everyone to do, Ben, in the next week to practice?
I mean, I'm a writer, and this is a thing that I actually advise my writing students to do, which is to just write down the things that happened to them in the day and not put any value judgment on them every day. This is something that I help students do who are struggling with writer's block or even thinking about how to start. With no judgment, good or bad, just list all of the things that happened to you in a day. First of all, what it helps you do is just get a practice going, right? You build a habit.
And what do they say? They say if you do something for 10 consecutive days, you've built a habit.
Right. It makes it a lot harder to stop. It doesn't take very long. And so it builds the habit of doing this. But what in this context it allows you to do, first of all, it's a vent. It allows you to release pressure of things that build up in your mind. But you can also go through and say afterwards, check off, look at all these good things in the day that I didn't even think about. This was a really good lunch. That's all it has to be. I loved that sandwich. Or I had coffee with a friend. Or I bumped into somebody on the street. Or I heard a really good song that made me happy. I danced in the living room. Whatever it is. You don't think about these things as you're doing them. And when you're not actively assessing your day, you don't actually think about it. But if you make that habit of spending 10 minutes just writing down, I got up at this time. I had this for breakfast. Between this time and this time, I did this. I had a conversation with this person. We talked about this. First of all, you're building that habit. You're venting that stuff, but then you can actually do an archive of these are the things that I was really happy about, and these are the things I wasn't really happy about. And that gives you a plan, right? Okay, I was unhappy about these things. What can I do about it? I was happy about these things. How can I get more of that? That's what I would do. That's my practice suggestion. What do you think?
I've been thinking a lot about, again, something that my therapist said, which was that if you're watching a sporting event, you'll see athletes when they take the opposing position, meaning like if you're on offense and then you go to defense, or if there's a someone taking free throws, let's say, and they're so laser focused, you'll see the guys from the opposing team that are lined up and you'll see them look around. And what that does is it expands your vision because you're so laser focused on one thing that you have to remind your brain that there's other things going around and going on. And I think my practice is going to be, instead of being so laser focused on the issues, because sometimes those are blaringly obvious, not to take anything away from that, but to look around sometimes and just expand my vision to be able to see more, to be able to see more depth and less living with blinders on, which I think is not conducive to actually happiness. That's going to be my thing, is like trying to widen the view, widen the lens, and see around, see more so that I can understand more, but also feel more. I think that'll lead to more opportunity to be grateful. Because if you stay so myopic, it's very hard not to be cynical. I can't do it anymore.
It's hard.
And there's so much to be upset about. I feel it in my elbow and I feel it in my back.
And it makes it hard to do the things we have to do.
It makes it hard to be the people we want to be for other people.
Which is why we do the things we have to do.
Yeah. And we all know what we have to do in the next leading up to the election. And I feel like if I can just widen the lens a little bit so that I'm allowing myself to feel things other than the heartache and despair that we're seeing right now globally, that I'll be a more effective fighter. And we hear a lot about self-care, and I think that's super important. And a lot of that seemingly has to do with like small luxuries, right, that we use as like an escape from the hellscape. But these breaks that I feel like women really need because of our cycles, which is so beautiful, these breaks that remind ourselves that good or funny things happen in the world, I think it's a really important part of taking care of ourselves and widening that lens. And I'm just so glad that everyone joined us tonight to take just the break, the breath. And I hope everyone who has watched or listened, who will find this maybe 20 years from now, I hope you'll realize the importance of smiling and finding the good and the importance of taking care of yourself. The bad news is there. It's always going to be there, no matter what. And if you look back on this podcast, by the way, April 29th is our 5-year anniversary. Most podcasts don't even last 1 year. And thank you for being such a huge part of it, Ben.
You too. We've been doing it together since day one.
We engage with a lot of tough topics almost every single week. It's hard. I don't think it's minimizing them to give everyone the grace of a short break to look around the room and widen your lens to see some of the good and allow that to motivate you to change the bad. I know I can probably speak for Ben when I say that we hope that we helped you do that tonight. So I don't know where this will take us, but thank you for joining us. And hopefully we will see you next time. And if you're just in the mood for bad news, our podcast, we also have a great backlog of issues. And we love you all so much. And I thank you all for being a part of my journey as a public figure, as an activist, as just a human. I love you, Ben.
Love you too. And thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time.
Sorry Not Sorry is executive produced by Alyssa Milano. That's me. Our producer is Ben Jackson, audio editing and engineering by Maciej Lewandowski, and music by Josh Cook, Alicia Eagle, and Milo Bugliari. Don't forget to rate, review, and spread the word. Sorry, not sorry.